Hey everyone, welcome to the Front Stretch Podcast. I am your host, Dustin Albino. This week I'm joined by my colleagues at FrontStretch.com and Zach Catanzaretti, as well as the driver of the number 00 Ford for Stewart Haas Racing in the Xfinity Series, Cole Custer, as we're here to break down a soggy weekend in the Irish Hills of Michigan. But first, tonight's podcast is sponsored by FanDuel. Go to FanDuel.com/FrontStretch today, register and play for one of hundreds of NASCAR contests, or even one of our own for a chance to win. We've already given away a Martin Truex Jr. autographed hat, a Ryan Truex chrome visor, and a piece of Dalton Sargeant sheet metal. Don't miss your chance to win on the next special NASCAR prize. Put your name in today and get in position to join in on the fun and play against your favorite Front Stretch staff writers. That's FanDuel.com/FrontStretch, your weekly fantasy NASCAR destination. Sokol, you started fourth and finished third at Michigan, picking up a bunch of stage point. Overall, how would you assess your weekend in the Irish Hills?
I was really happy with it. I mean, I think we had a really fast Code 3 Mustang, but it was a really strange race because we had that different aero package. And it was a lot about track position and where you were on restarts, where you were restarting. So we were able to have some things go our way, and, you know, we were able to have some good restarts and end up third. So I think we were happy with it, and hopefully just keep our top five streak going.
Yeah, and like you mentioned, NASCAR implemented that restrictor plate package with the Xfinity cars for not only this past weekend, but also the weekend before at Pocono. Take us through a little bit of your mindset going into practice, because that was one of the most wild practices I've ever seen, really.
Yeah, I mean, nobody really knew what to expect, so it was you were really trying to figure things out and testing a lot of things that you thought maybe could work or not work in the draft, and then you're also trying to get your car to handle pretty decent in the pack. So it was definitely a decent amount of things that we didn't really know what to expect, and we were trying to figure out.
And Zach, for you, I mean, we were both there in Michigan this weekend. Were you kind of surprised with how amped up practice was?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, you always expect guys to be a little wishy-washy with their cars, at least for first practice. But yeah, I mean, just as Cole said, they wanted to get out there and test the waters and see what they had. And yeah, we saw a lot of side-by-side, a lot of 2-3 wide, some 4 wide, even going into turn one at one point, just packed stuff. So that really got everyone pretty excited for the race. And I mean, just when it comes to packages like this, I try not to be surprised with anything because we have no clue what we're going to expect. And yeah, I was pretty surprised that practice was as wild as it was, and it led to a pretty fun race. I definitely enjoyed it. Yeah, it got single file here and there, but I mean, that's just how plate racing goes, and just how a lot of guys, like I asked Cole after the race what he really saw this race as, and he said it was like a truck race at Michigan and a plate race. You know, Daytona and Talladega, kind of a mix of both, where handling and drafting was so important. So it was really, really an interesting race, and it all started with practice, as you said.
Yeah, Cole, a lot of drivers kind of felt that way too, that have run in the truck series, that it was kind of like a truck series race at Michigan. Would you feel the same?
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was like a truck race, but a little bit easier to drive. I mean, it was didn't fight as much handling as you do in truck race, but so we had a little bit more drafting, like a super speedway. But it was a little bit similar, and got the take, you know, having that experience probably helped a little bit.
And overall, now that we've run this package 2 weeks in a row, what are your thoughts on it? Should it be run at these two tracks, or do you like it better than one at the other?
I mean, I think Pocono was probably better off leaving it how it was. And then Michigan, I feel like it can work there, but they might have to do some tweaking to make it work all right, because it seemed like once we got single file, it was really hard to pass on a long green run, and you just couldn't really do much. So, I mean, I think what made the race good was the restarts, and, you know, they were really exciting. But once we got kind of racing, it was a little bit frustrating because it was really hard to pass.
Yeah, Zach, and I was going to mention this to Cole, too. So, Zach, I'll go to you first. It still seemed like clean air was king at Michigan.
It was, you know, quite a bit, as Cole said. I wanted to ask him about really just the suck up, how much you can really do. And yeah, once we saw, you know, Kyle Busch get off front, and we saw a little bit of more aggression near the end when it came to the rain coming down. And I felt like we saw a lot of restarts. I mean, we never really got a long green flag run. I believe we started with 17 laps before Christopher Bell's wreck. And from there on, it was kind of a short little stint. So we never really saw pitch strategy really come with green flag pit stops and everything. So I would have really enjoyed to see how the race really evolved from that point forward, but just a lot of restarts, and they were really aggressive, and you know, I tried keeping track of how they were able to do those passes, and it looked like the second lane was really the preferred going down low, that's where you tried to make your pass, but you needed a little bit of help. And as I said, I wanted to ask Cole, you said it was tough to pass. I mean, were you really able to get a suck up on Cars, or was it really important that you had someone behind you pushing you to make that possible?
I mean, you could definitely get a suck up on Cars. It was just once you pulled out, you kind of stall out a little bit. So you needed help from behind you to kind of push you. And or you needed just a really fast car. So it was a little bit different. You could kind of go into the corner and side draft them and then try and take their line away on the top. But it was definitely, you know, different passing than what we always do. So it was interesting, but it was definitely difficult.
And Cole, do you feel like this package kind of helps the smaller teams? Because at times we saw, I mean, Kaz Grala came from the back to the front twice and led some laps. Does it kind of help the smaller teams level the playing field, if you will?
Yeah, I mean, I would say a little bit. I mean, I think the cars that are fast are always going to be fast. But I think since there was so much, it was so circumstantial on restarts and everything like that, you could definitely find somebody who was a little bit more lower budget up front. So it made it a little bit interesting, and I think it probably did help those guys a little bit. So, that's what I would say about that.
Yeah, Zach, it was wild watching those restarts because, like Cole was mentioning, if you didn't have help, you're going to the back. Paul Menard restarted second, obviously not for a small team, driving for Team Penske, but still, I think he restarted second, and within a lap, he was ninth. So we saw the same thing last week at Pocono as well.
Yeah, and you mentioned Kaz Grala, and he was one, I mean, he was a fascinating guy to watch. I mean, we've known him as a little bit of a plate racer. He got that Daytona win last year in the trucks, but I was really shocked when he was able to bring Fury race cars from literally last on the field all the way, and eventually took the lead. And just as you said about not having help, he lost help. He lost the lead, and he ended up falling back to 12th right there at the end. That reminded me of plate racing when you're stuck in the middle and you just go completely backwards, and we saw that a few times. So, yeah, it definitely opened up the opportunity hole for some smaller teams. We saw Ross Chastain and Jeremy Clements get up inside the top 15, top 10 there early with Chastain, and we talked to them about plate racing, and you would think that small teams were a fan of it, but at least Jeremy Clements wasn't. I'd be interested to get his take on it now, but I feel like it opened up opportunity, as plate racing always does, and you just, as Cole said, you just needed that help pretty much the entire way.
Cole, we heard a lot this weekend from in past weekends too about how much the driver's not in control with this package. Is that safe to say, or what is your view on that?
Yeah, I mean, a little bit for sure. It seemed like, you know, and with the old package, there's a lot more the driver could do, I would say. But with this package, you can still do a lot of stuff, but it's a lot more circumstantial, and, you know, I don't know if the best drivers are always going to shine, but I think there is still a little bit of the driver in.
But in NASCAR, shouldn't the best driver shine?
I mean, you would say so, but I mean, obviously the fans want exciting racing. So, I mean, it's, you know, that's kind of the question right now.
And Zach, we've seen this package now twice, both at Pocono and Michigan, and we saw in the All-Star race too. So overall, Zach, how would you score the package?
I'm happy with it. I mean, Pocono showed you that. I mean, everyone got all up in arms after Pocono, but that just didn't show you it's a failure. It just shows that it doesn't work everywhere. It just didn't work there. When it came to Charlotte and Indy last year, I mean, that was a great race. I really enjoyed it. I spoke to Tommy Joe Martins. I mean, he had a lot of fun in that race, and I felt Michigan was a great race. I mean, I enjoyed it. I definitely side with the drivers. We've gotten thoughts from Keselowski, who was pretty outspoken on Friday about it, and I definitely side with the drivers. I love to see, and we saw it with the Indy 500 a little bit, how it was really more in the driver's hands. That's a completely different package, of course, but it's different from the DW12 era. And I love when driver's skill really shines on the racetrack. It's fun to see those side-by-side racing, and you always hope for a photo finish and great racing start to finish. But when it comes to just natural racing, they get a little bit spread out, and you start going up, going high, going low. Strategy comes involved. You start changing with your tires a little bit, and as you said, driver skill and those dynamics usually come out, and that's what I really, really enjoy to see. I love watching the best race car drivers in the world on the track every week, and this package does change that up quite a bit. I don't think we're going to lose as many talents as Keselowski said, but it's just something that we're going to see how it changes over time. And, you know, so far, just kind of nitpicking a couple tracks, I've been pretty happy with it. But I don't want to see it become a normal thing. We've heard a lot of drivers say that, and I'm kind of on that side. Just do it a few times a year, if maybe one Michigan and not the second one, stuff like that. But I'm happy with it. But, yeah, it's just one of those things you have to balance out with the rest of the schedule.
Cole, you mentioned it needed tweaks, and I talked to Ross Chastain last Saturday after the race, and he was mentioning how it felt like you were kind of crawling around the track. This was after Pocono. And you ran both races at Pocono Cup, your second start in Cup, and then in Xfinity as well. So how much slower does it feel from the driver's seat?
Well, at the end of the straightaway, it's about 40 miles an hour, so it was pretty big. But, I mean, it's a slow package, and they were trying something and trying to make the racing a little bit better. And obviously, like you said before, I don't think it worked at Pocono very well, and I don't think it's going to work at every track. But it did seem like it was, there's some track it's going to work at. So they just have to look at that in the future.
And you mentioned some tracks. What tracks do you think NASCAR maybe should try it on?
Probably more higher banked tracks, I would say. I mean, Michigan, they could probably make it work in Michigan. I think probably needs some tweaks there to make it work on the bottom so you don't just get freight trained. But places maybe like Kansas or something like that, you know, they're high banked and mile and a half. They could, I feel like that can maybe work there.
You mentioned how you get freight train on the bottom, and we saw that all day long on restarts especially. Is that just because the higher banking, you got more momentum off the top?
Yeah, you just couldn't keep your momentum up on the bottom because you just the second lane is more banked than the bottom lane, so you just kind of keep momentum up there, and you just get stuck down the bottom because everybody's lined up. So if you restart on the bottom, you're just kind of, you know, holding on, and you couldn't really do anything about it. So it was a little bit frustrating there, but maybe they can make some tweaks to make it a little better.
Now, Zach, you mentioned earlier you thought the Xfinity race in Michigan was a great race. And we went out to dinner Saturday night, and we talked about Stage 1 specifically and how they were all single file. You still really think that was a great race? I think it was an overall good race, but I don't know about great.
Yeah, I mean, as I said, I kind of go into it with an open mind. To see them be able to stay close, that was really the one thing. And I felt that the potential for passing was there. It was just the guys kind of racing a little less aggressive for that opening stage, which I would kind of expect. What we saw at Pocono and even the All-Star race, I mean, Harvick was able to get out by about half a second, maybe three-quarters of a second. With this race, I mean, they were bumper to bumper right there. To me, that was the biggest thing I was looking for, was how close everyone could stay with one another. Kept me on my toes quite a bit. I mean, especially, you know, at the end of the stages, of course, it kind of ramps up a bit. But early in the race, you're going to see guys kind of lay back a little bit, kind of dip their feet in the water when they can. But just overall, I mean, just the potential for closer competition was there, and that's really what I was looking for.
And Cole, I want to talk specifically a little bit now about your team. The past three races, you guys have really come alive, scoring top five in each of those races, jumping up to second in the points. Two of those obviously on the plate in the plate races. So overall, how would you assess your season so far, 4 months in?
Yeah, I mean, I would say that at the start of the year, we had a good amount of speed. We just weren't kind of getting the finishes that we really wanted. And now I feel like, you know, we still have the speed, and we're starting to, you know, get more consistent and get, you know, the finishes that we want. So, and compared to last year, I feel like we can kind of show up to every single track and be fast at, where last year it was kind of mostly just a mile and a half where we were fastest. But this year, I feel like we can kind of go everywhere.
Zach, do you have any final questions for Cole before we transition into the Cup series?
Yeah, I guess this question will kind of transition to Cup a little bit, but yeah, you've won two Cup races so far this year. I feel like you definitely include that at Pocono. How do you feel, I mean, your teammates with Harvick, SHR, kind of on both sides, having that experience on the Cup track, how do you feel Harvick was able to help you, not only for your two Cup starts, but how that's kind of bled over to Xfinity this year?
Yeah, I mean, Kevin's always been pretty big for me. Like last year when I first started running Xfinity, I would call him every single week and try and get advice for him on things to look at and things to try. So he's always been a big help to me and been really open to me. So, and he's obviously one of the best to talk to. So with these Cup races, I've tried to talk to him before the races and see what he thinks. And he's definitely helped, and just trying to get better every single time I hit the racetrack in the cup car.
And have you been able to lean on the other Stewart-Haas racing teammates as well? And Eric Almirola, Kurt Busch, and Clint Bowyer?
A little bit, for sure. I mean, we've obviously got four really good drivers, so whenever you can lean on them is great. So, I mean, I've mostly talked to Kevin Harvick because he runs the most Xfinity races, mm-hmm. but I've definitely talked to other guys a little bit, and they've been a pretty big help.
Sweet. Now let's move on to the Cup Series, and we're going to talk a lot about your team still, Stewart Haas Racing, because they led 104 of the 133 laps run on Sunday. It was Clint Bowyer that ended up top. Zach, were you kind of surprised with the prick call Mike Bugger Ravage made late in the going there, taking two tires?
A little bit. I mean, yeah, when the rain is starting to come closer and closer, you kind of expect two tire calls and more guys to stay out. I mean, I know Jeff Gluck was talking about it a bit. We expected a little more aggression, at least from smaller teams. I think there were 33 cars on the lead lap at the end, and why none of them really chose to really stand out from the pack and really try to get to the lead and just see what happens. I mean, that's pretty beyond me. It's kind of per team, I guess. But, yeah, with Bowyer, it's cool to see him win. I mean, I did not expect him to, if we saw a 1-2-3 finish for SHR, I didn't really see him coming out with a win. Even Kurt this weekend was so strong. He got the pole. He led a bunch of laps. And I really felt like he had the car early on. And then Harvick really came up, and as he always does, and he ended up leading the most laps, I believe. And he had the lead there on that final restart, and Clint just drove right around the outside. Reminded me of Dover a couple months ago, where those guys were racing for the lead, and Bowyer lost that day. But this weekend, he was able to just true grit. He got around him, and he held on. Perhaps that rain came in at a perfect time, but yeah, to see Bowyer get that win was huge. It's so much fun to see him win a race. I've never seen someone celebrate like him. Martinsville was a blast, and this one perhaps was even better. I mean, it was just a lot of fun there. So, yeah, just I'm not going to say shocking, but just to see Ford, I think they had seven in the top eight as well. I mean, just they just had it on all day. And Larson was kind of quiet. He had his incident late. Chase Elliott was quieter than I expected. And Toyota only had Kyle, really. Even Truex was quiet. So it was just a Ford type of day all day.
Yeah, Cole, after the race, Clint said that was a gamble to stay out, and he says smart people don't gamble. But we saw Ford dominate that race with Ryan Blaney winning stage one, and they had, seven of the top eight finishers, I believe. Cole, you're in a Ford. What makes Ford so good? Obviously, it's their backyard at Michigan, but what makes them so good at the track?
See, right now, I feel like it's just their commitment to try and win. I think they're at an all-time high trying to help their teams. And really, we have, Penske, Roush, Stewart Haas. I mean, they're all really great teams. So I think it's all just kind of coming together for them. And I think they have a really great motor program with Roush Yates. So it's just everything's just kind of clicking right for them right now. And they're putting the effort in to help their teams. And I think it's really showing.
And obviously all day Saturday and Sunday, really, we were racing the rain. So how challenging is that, knowing that – that once you cross the second stage and that's official, the race could be over at any time. Challenging is that, knowing that.
Yeah, we caught that in our race too. It was challenging because you're trying to predict the rain, when it's going to come, and you're hoping for it. And we thought it was going to come like 20 minutes before it did in our race. Like, it just slowed down so much. So it's so hard to predict the rain. You just have to, like you said, you kind of have to roll the dice and gamble.
And you're kind of going off with your crew. I mean, you don't know, right? Because you don't have a radar in your car. But so you're kind of going off what your crew chief and your spotters are telling you.
Yeah, you're going off your crew chief and you're trusting them. And you kind of, at some point, you get a little bit annoyed because you're just like, man, like, where is the rain at? You said it was like 5 minutes away, and I was like 10 minutes ago. But eventually, it came, and I think the Bowyer and I think our team made the right call on trying to gamble a little bit.
Of course. And Zach, you kind of hit on this, but I'm surprised that more teams didn't stay out for that after the end of stage, or after the Stenhouse crash. Casey Kane did, and he came in with one lap to go, and then he pitted. But he proved earlier that he could run in the top five, top ten for at least 10 laps when he made a similar move earlier in the race.
Yeah, and he even held on to the lead. I guess it was like a one-lap restart, and then there was an accident like a lap or two later, and he held off those guys. I mean, yeah, it's so weird how we rarely really see that. I mean, I guess they were looking at maybe different radars than the 14 team was. I don't know what was happening, but with so many guys up there, I guess they were scared they were going to be that one guy to not pit, and they were going to cause an accident, be in the way, and just all hell was going to break loose. I don't know, but man, I mean, if you're a Bubba Wallace, I mean, a Ty Dillon, Ryan Newman, I mean, I don't see these guys, you know, winning any races. I mean, we got Daytona coming up, a road course with Almendinger maybe, but who knows how many more rain shortened races we're going to get before the playoffs start, and that could have been their ticket in. I mean, you just never know, and nobody really took that chance. So, I mean, I know we kind of lost out on perhaps an even more exciting run to the end there, but yeah, it's just something that I'm really trying to understand on why a lot of those backmarkers don't show up. I mean, as I said, they just don't want to be that one guy who goes out and it just doesn't work out for them.
Yeah, cool. I think Zach brought up a good point there. So how surprising, and if you're in a situation like that, would you want to, in this sense, roll the dice and gamble?
I think it depends on what your situation is. I mean, Quint, obviously, he already had a win, so he's in the playoffs. So, I mean, he could, you know, he could kind of roll the dice and try and get a second win and, you know, hope it all works out. And it doesn't really hurt him points-wise if it doesn't. Or, I guess, you know, if you look at Stenhouse's situation, and he's not walking into the playoffs or anything. So, I would say, you know, he has to worry about his points a little bit more if it doesn't work out. So, I don't know. I think it depends on a little bit of the point situation, but it is always gambling no matter what.
Yeah, especially Stenhouse, because he's right on that bubble there. I think he's 4 points down or something right now. Now, Cole, I'm going to put you on the spot here. SHR right now is 7 wins in the first 15 races in the Cup Series this year. It seems like there's no sign of them really slowing down, but if you had to guess right now, and I feel like you're probably going to say all of them, but how many races do you think or expect SHR to win realistically by the end of the year?
I would say many more, but I can't give you a real clear number, but I feel like they're definitely going to knock off another, you know, I feel like Kurt will get one and Eric will get one, so I think they're definitely going to get some wins this year, because, I mean, all the cars are fast, so I have no idea what number that could be, but I think it'll be a high one for sure.
And Zach, we've talked about this a lot this year because, well, really there hasn't been that much to talk about besides Stuart Haas and then some of the Toyota teams. How many wins do you think they're going to get this year?
I'll say they're about halfway. I'll say they're halfway on their wins right now. I guess 14 by the end of the year. We're almost getting to the halfway point of the season, so I guess that makes a little bit of sense. But I definitely try looking at who's dominating the season now and not really laying it in cement that they're going to dominate the rest of the season. We saw that with Truex and Kyle last year, though it took Kyle a long time to get to victory lane. It was really just those two up there. They got all the stage points, and with this year, Harvick's that guy with just a few guys kind of following behind him. So I think Kyle's going to definitely get a lot of wins. Kyle Busch in the 18, Larson still. I'd say we got about, you know, maybe 5 different winners. Just depends how Daytona and the road courses play out and if we do get any more rain-affected races. But I'd say that SHR is about halfway. I'd say Harvick's going to get quite a few of those, maybe Boyer, Kurt, and maybe even Eric. I'd say they're about halfway.
Yeah, they're so fast right now. And I was talking to Eric Almirola prior to the race on Sunday, and he just mentioned how they're all hungry on that, on the number 10 team specifically. And we've seen such an increase in performance in that car this year in that team. Now, Cole, if you're Harvick, and you mentioned your relationship earlier with him, but are you frustrated that, are you, meaning him, would you be frustrated that he didn't get the win because he led the most laps, and then he seemed pretty pleased, though, with a 1-2-3 Stuart Haas Racing finish?
Yeah, I mean, I think he always wants more, and he's not going to be extremely happy about it, but I think he is a little bit happy. Of, you know, I think him and Flynn are pretty good buddies, so he's happy for Flynn, and I think he saw that it was a good day for Stuart Haas' company, so I think he's a really good leader at Stuart Haas, but I think, you know, he knows the situation, and he's happy about it, so I think he was, you know, he wants to win, but he wasn't too upset with that 1-2-3 finish.
And Zach, you wrote about Harvick post-race, I know, so take me through what he said after the race, specifically.
Well, he's got a really good perspective for this race team. We know how much he wins, but we also know how well-known he is to Clint Boyer. I mean, when Boyer kind of talked about him post-race, when he joined RCR way back in 06, 07, around there, I mean, Harvick was the guy who really molded him into a cup driver, and Harvick was, I mean, yeah, you're never going to get a guy finishing second who's going to be necessarily happy. I mean, he had that race win. As I said, I was very surprised Boyer stole it from him, but yeah, he's there for the race team. He knows, we know how well he knows Tony Stewart, and he's had the best points of his career have come with SHR these last 5 years, and just knowing Emil took a stand back and look at what the team really accomplished on Sunday. 1-2-3 is really tough to do, really tough to do, and to do it at Michigan, where it's so important to Ford and everybody. I mean, that's not just something that they talk about. Ford comes into Michigan, and same with Chevy, they want to win badly. They put a lot of effort into this team and into this race, and you know, we talked about the engines and just how well they performed. So he kind of looked past just, oh, I didn't win, oh no. I mean, he looked past that and looked at the whole race team and the track and the manufacturer, and he understood that it was overall a very positive day, even though he personally didn't get the win.
Yeah, Zach brought up a good point there, because that was the first 1-2-3 finish in the Cup Series for any team since 2008. I don't have a good transition to this, but let's step away from talking about your team, Cole, and Stewart Haas Racing, and a variety of teams and drivers specifically lost control of their car in the Cup race off turn four, whether it's either cutting down tires or whatnot with Daniel Suarez. Kyle Larson lost it from being loose. Matt Kenseth even. What do you think led to that? Is Michigan just that kind of tricky?
Yeah, I mean, I think off of four there, it can get a little bit sketchy, because I think the car gets a little bit light and then you're kind of transitioning on a straightaway. So, I mean, and obviously Michigan's a very fast racetrack, and a lot of aero comes into play. So if you're not in a good spot aero-wise and keep air taking off of you, it can definitely, you know, send you around, you know, in a second. So it's definitely a tough racetrack, you know, that you have to really be on your toes on, because it'll bite you when you least expect it, because it'll snap so fast.
Yeah, it seems like everything happens a lot quicker there with the speeds that they're going.
Yeah, things happen. Everything happens a lot quicker, about 10 miles an hour.
And Zach, I don't know if you talked to any of those drivers after the race, but Larson specifically is coming into the track with 3 straight wins at Michigan. He had at the end of the day.
Yeah, he did. I mean, yeah, he talked during the press conference on Friday, and he said that if he were to win this race, it would be the toughest of his 4 wins. And he said that before the race, and yeah, just going in, I mean, he knew how well the Fords were, and even Kyle and Truex, and just for him to be able to sneak through those guys and actually get the win once again. He hasn't won yet this year. I mean, it would have been probably the biggest, outside of it, he got his first win here. Outside of that, it might be the biggest win he's had. But yeah, just as we said, he struggled throughout the day. He wasn't really up front. I think he led 1 lap, and that was under pit cycle, and then he was one of the guys who lost their cars and spun to the grass, and from there on, I mean, he was done. So yeah, just overall, I wasn't too surprised that I was surprised that he struggled as much as he did, but I didn't really expect him to go up there and lead all the laps like he's done, and a win would have surprised me at this, you know, just what we've seen this year. It would have been a mutual kind of a smaller surprise, but yeah, to see him kind of run back there and then to actually lose his car. Cole brought up a good point about just the aero and how important it was. You're so on edge, and every little thing could upset these cars, and I mean, he was just one of the victims of that.
Yeah, no Chevy team was really competitive, at least for the win this weekend in Michigan. But Zach, any final thoughts here before we make our predictions for this weekend in Iowa?
Yeah, just overall, just a fun weekend. I mean, it was me and Dustin's first time at the track.
That was a long-ass ride.
The race together. Yeah, very, very long, and the rain made it even longer. But it also made it more interesting and more memorable. We had a lot of good times there, so just kudos to Michigan. They put together a fun, exciting weekend, and I enjoyed every bit of it.
I echo your words. Long-ass drive to Michigan from New York, and for you, Pennsylvania, but definitely worth it. Cole, so your first time on the podcast here, we make predictions each week, and this week, obviously, the Cup Series is off. However, you and the Xfinity Series are racing, as well as the Truck Series. So I won't put you on the spot yet, but I'll go to Zach with his predictions for the Truck Race and the Xfinity Race.
Starting with Xfinity, of course, I picked Cole Custer, but the guy who's going to finish second to him is going to be Christopher Bell. To me, he's just a tremendous talent. No matter what type of track you throw him on, he's going to do very, very well. But short tracks especially is so strong with Joe Gibbs Racing and so strong with Christopher Bell. So I said he's going to get that win for this year. And for the truck series, I'm going to go with a first-time winner. That's Harrison Rhodes. Not Harrison Rhodes, Harrison Burton, sorry. He already has more top tens this year than he did last year. And he's only done two races this year, and he did six last year. So, you know, he had a really solid run at Dover. He ran Iowa last year, just missed the top 10, and I was pretty impressed with that at the time. So, I mean, a win this year would be huge for him. It would be massive, but I feel like he can really pull it off.
And Cole, who do you got winning the truck race? And I'd imagine you're probably going to pick yourself for Xfinity.
Yeah, I think for the truck race, I mean, even though they've been a little bit off this year, I don't know if they're exactly where they want to be. I think Matt Crafton will be there at the end, and I think he'll find a way to try and win a race this year. And I think Iowa might be a good chance to win one. So I'm going to pick Matt Crafton, maybe an underdog or a second pick. I would pick Jesse Little because they're a small racing that's been doing a lot of great things. But in the Xfinity race, I mean, I think we have a really good shot to win. I think we were really good there in the second race, and I feel like we've gotten our short track stuff better this year. But I think we'll be in the contention to win. Obviously, Christopher Bell will be in the fight, and Daniel Hemric, and all those guys. So I think it'll be a competitive one for sure.
Yeah, for me, I'm going to go also first-time winner in trucks with Todd Gilliland. He's running all the races from here on out, and he's been super fast whenever he's been in a truck for Kyle Busch Motorsports. And then for Xfinity, Cole, I really think you're going to get it done this week, and I'm not going to lie. Like you said, you ran well there in the past, last year. So make me look good, but what makes a driver good at Iowa?
Oh, well, it's tough because it's such a rough racetrack. It has that tunnel bump in the middle of one and two that's so big. But you're trying to get your car good enough where you can kind of try and, you know, get through the bumps good. And then the track changes throughout the day, so you have to be on top of that as a driver and be able to run the top good and be able to run the bottom good and make passes also. So it's definitely it's a tough racetrack, but, you know, with experience and everything like that, you try and you earn it.
Well, cool, man. Really appreciate you joining the podcast this week. And until next weekend, or next week, where we review Iowa, the truck race and Xfinity race at Iowa, and preview, we're going road course racing next weekend. So until then, we out.